Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
So, Eric, let's talk about the MJF Jungle Boy promo to start off our analysis here, because to me that stood out as a big part of the show. I really liked the back and forth with MJF and Jungle Boy. I thought it was Jungle Boy's best promo work to date. I thought MJF set him up really well. I thought MJF was really effective as a heel, and I thought Jungle Boy is really effective contrasting who he is compared to who MJF is. And it was an MJF promo without – it had, you know, the heelish, cocky bombast that is MJF, but it wasn't seeking social media buzz. It wasn't trying to shock you with a jaw-dropping, I can't believe he did that or said that type moment. But it showed MJF can, I think, really shine and really be good without that. What stood out to you? Are you with me on this?
Yeah, I think it was a good segment. My only quibble is I would have promoted MJF's appearance on the show just because I think he's probably somebody the fans are interested in seeing, and they didn't say they could have even done on the poster, we'll hear from MJF, right, without saying when, right, without giving up when he would come out. MJF put over Jack Perry saying lots of nice things about him, right? So it was the heel being a heel, but he's building up the babyface while he's doing it, which is good. I don't think MJF's comment that what was your reward? He seemed to be almost trying to turn Jack Perry heel, like, or planting the seeds for some future heel turn. But I guess it was ultimately just to set up Jack Perry rejecting that, pathway that MJF was laying out in front of him and, you know, saying, I'm going to do things my way, which was sort of the heart of the promo. I don't recall Jack Perry not getting a lot of TV time. I don't think that's been the case. He's had, I think, you know, some of the most wins in AEW history, and he wasn't doing it on AEW Dark for the most part. The Jungle Boy, Jack Perry, showed some fire in his response. I really like that. You don't always see that from him, and sometimes when Jack has done an in-ring promo or a pre-tape, I know you've noticed this, his instincts aren't always great. he didn't have great babyface instincts or wasn't being produced well enough. I liked that MJF was calling, saying, you know, Jungle Boy Jack Perry is too weak to be mean enough to do what it takes, because that's been Jungle Boy's storyline pretty much for the last, you know, 3+ years. It was the storyline with Christian, too. You don't have what it takes to beat me in a casket match. And then, of course, he did. He did the concerto and rolled him into the casket, and we haven't seen Christian since. The other quibble I had, and I'm curious to know what you think of this, is MJF saying it only took you 4 years to learn how to talk. That seems to be pointing to Jack Perry weakness, and I that sort of stuck out to me. Was that
I have no problem with that, and this is where there is nuance, I guess, in what might seem like a criticism, like, well, what does talking have to do with winning or losing? I think it's pretty obvious, people. Jack Perry, for one, he didn't talk for a long time, and then he started talking, and it wasn't good. And you know, the implication is, one, MJF is insulting something that might be an insecurity of Jack Perry. But the thrust of the interview is still you were a nice guy who wasn't able to get ahead at a rapid pace. And I went out there and I achieved a lot, and I proved that my approach is better. And yes, you can read into that if you are a viewer and go, well, MJF's saying I got more TV time because I'm bombastic and talented at talking. But it kind of goes to Ricky Starks making fun of Jake Hager for a speech impediment. That was a heelish thing to do, and I think bad judgment on Ricky Starks' part. MJF picking on a weak part of – that's a heelish thing to do. Well, you know, that's a dickish thing to do. So he's picking on the weak part. He didn't say you're not in shape. He didn't say you're not a good athlete. He didn't say that you're not, you know, driven to be great. He picked on something that rings true and seems, you know, sort of nasty to bring up. I mean, it's like, you know, if he had bad complexion, it'd be mean to say that. You know, it's just like he's picking on something that isn't an obvious strength of him. But I don't think it undercuts the believability. It doesn't necessarily say that's why he didn't get ahead. It's just MJF taking a shot at him in an area that, you know, fans can go, well, that's not relevant. I still like Jack Perry better than you. And if he isn't a bombastic, cocky talker, that doesn't change how I feel about him. So I think if you imagine the typical Jack Perry fan, they're going to think MJF's just being a jerk.
Yeah, and I guess the counterpoint to the you couldn't talk was that, you know, when it came to talking, as you know, this was probably Jack Perry's strongest promo to date in AEW, and he didn't have six takes at it, right, or unlimited takes. It wasn't a pre-tape. It was
right,
live in
yeah.
the ring, and he was either going to sink or swim. And so, you know, more broadly, this segment, you know, I wondered, are they setting up a title match next week, or are they going to stay the course and have a four pillars title match at the pay-per-view, which is what they seem to be building to, but it's not clear yet because there's still 8 weeks to go until the pay-per-view. But they did not tease a Jack Perry title match next week in Long Island. They just said it's going to be MJF Day. So
yeah, I think they're going to build to, you know, the pillars getting a match against MJF, whether it's one-on-one first or a four-way. I really liked, and by the way, AEW's really polished up the production. There's, you know, some elbow grease, some effort going into the production work that wasn't there before. And so just a broad compliment to that. You know, I think every promo and vignette, there was I complimented WWE for it for Raw on Monday. You know, they found such a wide array of ways to promote WrestleMania and individual matches that either was done for variety's sake or played to the strengths of and hid the weaknesses of the wrestlers involved in the segments. And AEW is getting better at that. So showing Darby in the back watching the match, and then also showing Sammy Guevara, you know, making out with Ty in the back too, struck me as a good way to very efficiently get across a couple of things. Darby's focused on the match. Sammy is not focused on the match. He's focused on making out with his wife. And then it also showed that they are still involved in this. This hasn't just shifted, oh, they're all four argued in the ring, but now it's just about Jack Perry. It was a way to communicate to viewers, no, it's still these all four pillars are kind of keeping an eye on each other. I also like that they said Sammy Guevara is going to be on his path to trying to earn a title shot, to justify a title shot on Rampage on Friday when they were promoting Rampage. So they're establishing, yeah, no, nobody's going to be gifted a shot against MJF if they haven't already earned it. And so he's got to take on Takeshita on Friday. So a lot of good things in this segment that I thought were productive, and we don't know when they're going to have a match, and that's fine. I don't think they need to tip their hand on that yet because, you know, obviously next week is MJF Day, and I think people expect, you know, maybe that'll be Darby's turn to hear enough of MJF and interrupt, and fans will cheer when or boo because it's Long Island, whatever MJF is up to.
Do you suppose there'll be a cake, or they've already shot that wad, the cake angle a couple of weeks ago? I wonder what MJF Day is. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there might be a cake. There might not. I don't know. I mean, they kind of did that already. I mean, I could see MJF bringing a cake out, you know, under, you know, like, and having it in a lockbox and like, no one's going to destroy this cake. I have the key and, you know, whatever. I mean, you know, they could play that up, but, Maybe it'll be cupcakes, and he'll have to cut a promo about how he likes cupcakes more anyway, or something,
yeah,
something like that.
As long as it's not, what was it that one time they had with Nyla Rose and Britt? Was it cheeseburgers or some bizarre thing a couple of years
yeah.
ago, sponsored thing?
Yep. Yes, but I, you know, when MJF took a shot at Perry, and Perry just was like, "Yeah, I wish I could talk like you. I wish I had the confidence you have. I wish I didn't care about anybody but myself." Like, I thought Perry just, you know, turn the tables on MJF and going, yeah, you can brag about being able to talk and being brash, but you don't care about anybody else. And I do. And I care about how I go about achieving success because I want to look at myself in the mirror and be proud of what I see. So, you know, I mean, this was, if the crowd, you know, was into it, and MJF is getting booed, and I think people genuinely like Jungle Boy Jack Perry. You know, he's well-liked in the back. I mean, he's considered like this super nice guy, but, you know, still green in terms of his instincts. So I thought this was, for people who know him, I think they'd go, yeah, this was a window into him and why, you know, he's a decent guy who people generally like. And he's not flashy, but he's someone that I think people watching in this context where he doesn't, you know, kind of, you know, screw up or seem too shy or just avoid of charisma. I mean, that's not it. It's more of a quiet charisma without the bombast. And this set up a match where, I mean, I was ready to see Jungle Boy and MJF after this was done and root for what Jack Perry stands for, winning out over MJF's cockiness. So, to me, this is just good because you strip away all the bells and whistles and, you know, there's no pipe bombs, there's no social media stuff, there's no meta stuff, there's no references to insider things or things said on a podcast. It's just, if it was real, this is what these two would be saying to each other.
Yeah, and Jack comments back about how MJF, you know, wakes up in the morning, looks in the mirror and has self-loathing, is MJF's sort of central character trait. I mean, he's said that in promos in the past. I also noticed that Jungle Boy seemed to have a new finisher. It looked like a version of Will Ospreay's Hidden Blade, because that's what he used to win the match against Matt Hardy, and then he tried to do it again against MJF, but MJF ducked out of the way and bailed out of the ring. So I think Perry's previous finishers were the snare trap kind of a thing, which is like a nice roll-up, you know, glorified roll-up, and then the submission, right, that he looked kind of small to be doing, maybe. I mean, I don't know how believable it was that he could get some, you know, a large person to submit, but, you know, we'll see how this one plays out for him. It's okay to steal another wrestler's move. It's done all the time.
Oh, for sure. It's not stealing. I mean, my God. Everybody's doing moves that wrestlers have. I mean, every once in a while you invent something and it's sort of your thing for that, you know, moment and you really get it over. And then if someone else in your same company is doing it, yeah, I can understand that being an issue. But if somebody in another company starts doing it, that's a compliment. You know, that means they thought it was a cool move and you actually came up with something that hadn't been done a lot before or at all before. But, you know, wrestlers are going to be possessive of that if they think that is something that's a signature thing, certainly within their own company.
Sure, Eddie Kingston has the spinning back fist. Chris Jericho has the, you know, the Judas effect, all, you know, elbows, fists with a spinning nature to, so, you know, it's a variations on a theme, and that's okay.
Yeah. All right, well, let's pause and introduce ourselves. We've got a lot more to talk about on the show. I know you've already seen a good portion of the All Access show that's airing in the background right now as we live stream this show. And so we'll get into that and more topics on Dynamite. Maybe we'll get into your take on everything going on with CM Punk and Jon Moxley that I've been reporting a lot on and on the flagship edition of the Wake Up and Wrestling podcast yesterday. Rich Fan and I talked for nearly an hour and a half about. So we'll probably have time to get into that too. But first things first, let's introduce ourselves and invite people to participate. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, March 29th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, the newsletter, the website, and a bunch of podcasts. And I am joined today by Eric Kroll, a former Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter columnist circa 1990, and now contributing here and there pretty consistently to PW Torch podcast and some written articles, a seasoned journalist in the Chicago region. Eric, welcome back to the culture.
Thank you once again for having me, Wade Keller.
You're welcome, Eric Kroll. Let's give out the phone number and the email. We invite our live streaming listeners to join us. The number is 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. And that is how we know that you want to be on the show. If you're live streaming us, but also keeping an eye on AW All Access, totally understood. I expect light calls this week with people being curious about the show. We sort of have to go head-to-head with, you know, the third hour of a show that we're talking about in a way. So this is a chance, if you are live streaming, to get in on the conversation, even if you normally don't. Or you can email us during a commercial break and still take part in the show that way. The number again, 347-215-8558. Push 1 when you call, or Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com as another way to get your thoughts or your questions worked into the program. All right, first up is Chris from Oklahoma. He is the first VIP priority caller, and then we have on deck Johnny in Atlanta as the second VIP priority caller. We'll go to Chris first here, though. Chris, thanks for calling. Welcome to the show. What did you think of Dynamite?
I absolutely loved it. I was really surprised because usually there's no story to Dynamite, but this time, I mean, they really cleaned themselves up with the Combat Club storyline. That was amazing, I thought, because honestly, who would have predicted that, you know, thought that Bryan Danielson would side with him with that. That kind of shocked me a little bit. Just consistency. I mean, it was a good show. It actually surprised me. I have one question and one comment. The question is, with Kenny Omega, when he's wrestling, and he's wrestling guys from, be it Mexico or Japan, you think it hurts him that maybe some people don't have no knowledge that certain people from IWGP or IWGP or Mexico?
Do you think it hurts Omega's feelings or difficult that
no,
he wrestled
no, no.
on that? Okay, yeah, I'm not understanding.
The knowledge of the people to the wrestlers. I know a lot of people may know these guys, but for me, I don't follow IWGP or, you know, anything like that. And so I don't know, have the knowledge of, say, a lot of people do. I mean, but I'm just curious, it kind of hurts the audience a little bit. That way they know Omega, but they don't know these other guys until.
Yeah, I mean, that is a challenge. Now, it worked, Eric, in the minute-by-minute numbers that I detailed in the Weight Teller Hotline for VIP members on Sunday. The minute-by-minutes for Kenny Omega and Vikingo were really good. And now this week, because Adam Cole was a big part of the AEW All Access show, they headlined Dynamite. They main evented Dynamite with Adam Cole against Danny Garcia. And the Kenny Omega singles match was near the top of the second hour against Jeff Cobb, or was it near the end of the first hour? Let me look that up quick in my report. Yeah, I guess it was near the second hour. But anyway, Eric, how do you think they're doing as far as that goes, what Chris is bringing up, that Kenny Omega is having these matches against wrestlers that a lot of the viewership knows, but a lot of the viewership isn't invested in? And how do you grade the job they did with Vikingo, and then how do you grade the job they did with Jeff Cobb, including promos in front of the New Japan sponsorship backdrop, and Excalibur, of course, doing the heavy lifting, providing the backstory on the match, what's at stake, and even what IWGP stands for?
I mean, how you would traditionally build these kind of matches is a week or two ahead of time, you would have had Vikingo come in or send in a promo. You'd have Jeff Cobb come in or send in a promo, or there'd be an altercation, you know, the old Memphis wrestling TV style, new guy comes in, heel of the month to take on Jerry Lawler, and they have a, you know, the guy wins a squash, then he has an interview, and Lawler comes out to confront him, right, or he calls out Lawler, that kind of thing. Your traditional shoot the angle, then have the match. That's not what it makes it easier for fans to at least know who the people are if they don't. That's not how AEW has really ever done things. I don't know if that's because they want to be different. I don't know if that's because they don't have access to the wrestlers for more than 1 week in the building. And what that does is it places a lot of pressure on the matches to get over, right? The matches have to really deliver. And I think you saw last week's match delivered a ton, right? That was a great match if you're into that style, which I am. Kenny was a great base.
Even if you're not into that style, that was hard not to be blown away by the athleticism, even if that's your, you know, preferred style of wrestling.
Unless you're watching Lucha Libre every week, you probably were in awe, right? Even if you do, probably Vikingo is just one of the best practitioners of it. Puts a lot of pressure on the matches to get over. I thought both matches got over. Jeff Cobb and Kenny Omega worked a New Japan style match, you know, hard hitting. They did a ton of moves. They pulled some counter wrestling out. Jeff Cobb hit a drop kick out of nowhere that was really impressive for a man of his size. That reminded me of New Japan champion Okada. And I guess tonight they did a U.S. title match preview that also recapped last week's angle and match with Vikingo and Hangman Page, Bucks getting put in the ambulance. My notes say Wade will be so happy they did this video package. And so you weren't coming in totally cold. I mean, I guess I admit I knew Jeff Cobb had been mocking Kenny Omega in New Japan because I watch the major shows at least. I'd forgotten that Kenny Omega did a backstage promo on January 5th calling out Jeff Cobb. I never even saw it because they put up the promos later. But, I mean, yeah, in a perfect world, you'd shoot it in a more traditional way to let it breathe and build a little bit more, but that's not what AEW is doing.
Yeah. I thought they did all right this week. And part of it is, I think people, even the AEW fans who don't know Vikingo or Jeff Cobb, they know that Kenny Omega has a reputation for being a great singles wrestler. And I think there's genuine desire to see that side of him get featured on a regular basis. And I think people imagined who were excited about AEW, giving them access to this buzz-generating wrestler in Kenny Omega, same thing with the Young Bucks, they just expected to see more of them. Now we're, 3.5 years past that point either you're an AEW fan or you're not, and people mostly know Kenny Omega from AEW now, even if it's been inconsistent in terms of him having singles matches or even being featured on TV. But I think we're at a point where fans are like, okay, Kenny's wrestling singles matches. He was considered the biggest or among, near a tie for the biggest star this company had with Jericho and Moxley, especially out of the gate. So let's see him. And I think there's an aspect of curiosity in anticipation that maybe now they're going to rev him up, that he's going to be involved in storylines. We're going to hear from him. And we're seeing that with the Don Callis storyline and Hangman Page. Things might have gotten a little thrown off with, Matt Jackson having a injured bicep. So we'll see. But my point is, I think Kenny Omega in and of himself is a draw. We're going to find out now when we get the ratings. And if I take a look at the minute by minutes, especially, did Kenny's match do better than the segment before or after? And even more so, did it do better than the same segment of minutes compared to the previous few weeks with whatever match was in that spot on the card, on the show? Because, being in the middle of the show versus the end of the show is going to have different expectations. So we'll look at that. But I think Kenny's a draw right now, and I think people are intrigued by him, and I think he's looking good in the ring. One thing I liked about it is they set up doubt that Kenny would win. Jeff Cobb, for a lot of people, is established. They like him. They know his work. Other people, they don't really know who he is. So having him have tape drip, setting up an angle ahead of time where his mind is elsewhere, there's a distraction. His friend Don Callis was attacked. There were so many things going on. It created a sense with me that, hey, maybe Kenny's going to lose because they're trying to create a bunch of excuses in essence for him losing, and then he still ended up winning. But even that, I think, Chris, you can watch and understand. Even if you don't know Jeff Cobb, you can go, hey, this is a story about Kenny. And he's got a lot going on right now. He's injured. There's some emotional things he's dealing with what happened to Callis that are throwing him off. So there's a sense of this person I'm invested in being in jeopardy. So I thought they did a good job, even if they didn't spend a ton of time, like you said, Eric, ideally spending a few weeks building up Jeff Cobb. Chris, back to you for follow-up or a different topic.
That helps me a lot there. Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Sure.
I was watching this AEW Unrestricted, and Britt Baker was talking to Toni Storm, who was interim champion at the time, and she made it seem like Thunder Rosa was faking an injury because she could get on a plane and go halfway across the country somewhere else, and that she couldn't come to work. And it made me curious: is there heat with Thunder Rosa at all?
Yeah,
women.
Very, very, very much so. It's been very public. Eric, talk about that, because I know that stood out to you.
Yeah. So the Chris raises a good point. The first segment of the new AEW All Access show, Britt just buries the hell out of Thunder Rosa. It's crazy. She buries her with words as they're sitting around talking in, obviously they know there's cameras following them around and they're being recorded. So, and then later in the show, it's actually on screen right now, before one of one of Britt's matches, they show the doctor shooting up her back with like a painkiller so she could go out there and perform because her back is hurting her. Literally, Thunder Rosa, the knock on her is her back injury isn't real, though not her back injury is real. But, you know, is I guess I haven't seen enough of AEW All Access to know how much of this is, you know, storyline driven to set up stuff in the future and how much of it's supposed to be an actual truthful look. To know, but yeah, Thunder Rosa had heat in the locker room before relinquishing the title and setting up the interim four-way match at All Out. You know, she suddenly got a back injury and was unable to defend the title when she was about to drop it. I think one-on-one to Toni Storm, right? And that has been the knock on Rosa, who denies and says she is legitimately hurt. I know Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer has said her back injury is legit. I don't know.
Yeah, what do you think, Eric, about, regardless of you know, the veracity of it, just that being one of the things featured on the show?
I mean, it's pro wrestling, so I assume it's to set up...
That's not a safe assumption in AEW. That's not a safe assumption in AEW. I know what you're saying, and it ought to be, and it might be, but it is such that heat between them is so legit. There is a chance that it is not to settle.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a burial that you expect, you know, I thought, well, maybe she's done with the company and isn't coming back, right? That thought occurred to me, but she's a Spanish language announcer, I think. So she's around and they're airing that. So I naturally assume, because it's pro wrestling, that they're turning this into an angle, although the angle really doesn't make sense right now, because she would definitely be Thunder Rosa, an AEW original, if she were coming back. And I assumed that this, what are they called? The Outcasts, the three heel women wrestlers, that Thunder Rosa, this was going to be the angle for her big return. She'd come back as a huge babyface defending as an AEW original. But that has yet to happen.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Chris, anything else before we move on to our next
episode?
That was it.
That's all, man. Thank you so much,
cool.
Guys. I appreciate it.
Of course, yeah. All right, we'll go to our next VIP priority caller, Johnny from Atlanta. Good to hear from you, Johnny. What are your thoughts on Dynamite tonight?
Wade, great to talk to you. VIP off and on since 2004. And Wade, I know you're not good at taking compliments, but I'd just like to take a second to appreciate you since I haven't talked to you in a while. You were a pioneer in the wrestling Gazette business way 35 years ago. And then in the infancy of the internet, you figured out how to make money off a website way before tons of people figured out how to do that. And even before the word podcast was born, you had audio shows that people could download, which was revolutionary at the time. And I remember getting my first subscription to VIP probably around 04 as a gift from a friend. And I started subscribing and listening to your audio shows and reading you and getting involved in the legendary message board back then. And ever since then, evolve with the times, and for my money, you're the foremost wrestling journalist on earth. So thank you for all of that.
Well, thank you. I very much appreciate it.
Yeah, I very
thank
much
you
appreciate
for your support over the years. Yeah, yeah. Walk on.
Yeah, and thanks for the email. The VIPs just got an email tonight, or I just got my email tonight saying, hey, how about bringing back the VIP priority to the after show? So that inspired me to write you an email and call in. And I've been a really big fan of AEW for the last few years now. You know, been a wrestling fan off and on since the 80s. Really loved the WCW glory days and all that stuff, and reliving it on some podcasts from like 1986 and the glory days. And I really see a lot of the Four Horsemen in MJF these days from what he does. And by the way, I just looked up that Burberry scarf that he wears. It's $525. I couldn't believe that. I'm like, okay, he's silent. What's so good about that scarf? Oh, I get it now. It's a whole thing, the Burberry thing. I didn't realize
yeah
that before.
Yes. I didn't either, but, so, you know, watch and learn, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and it comes in many different colors. Still probably a little bit out of my price range. But, I've since Adam Cole's injury, I started watching him on Twitch, watching his stream, And, you know, he just streams video games. He doesn't talk about wrestling and just seems like, you know, about one of the nicest dudes around and really positive guy, yeah. Really nice to the people that go into his Twitch channel. And it was just great to see him come back after the whole story. And I haven't watched the next show yet. It's on pause right now, but I just wanted to call in. And I don't know if I even have a question, but I really like the AEW product as far as somebody who's old school in wrestling. I haven't watched WWE in years, but I'm all in on AEW. And I love how they mix in the old guys with the new guys. And everybody seems to be really good wrestlers. The women are really quality wrestlers. And I just love the show. I know you guys are paid to make your comments and kind of nitpick a little bit, but I really liked everything from every direction so far. And I've been buying the pay-per-views, which is something I haven't done in a while, but I'm all in on those. Huh. So I just love the product from an old guy perspective.
Who are, Eric, were you going to chime in?
Yeah.
I was going to chime in with nothing productive. Wait. The word nitpick is a triggering word for Wade Keller, John.
No, just from you.
Just
from
so
you
you're aware. Okay.
just from you. There are times there are nitpicks. There are other things that are not nitpicks that you characterize as nitpicks. It's always about context, Eric. It's about the nuance of not broad brothers.
Not
there we go. Thank you. Thank you, Johnny, coming to my rescue.
Yeah.
Johnny, let me ask you this, since we haven't heard from you before on this show. What you say you like everything about AEW, but what do you like most now about AEW that you think is different than maybe what they were doing 1, 2, or 3 years ago? Is there anything from a progress, change, evolution standpoint where you think, yeah, that's one of the things that they're actually doing better than they used to?
Yeah, I got in during COVID, so every week they were at that place in Jacksonville, and you just kind of gave it like, okay, they're stuck here. But I just appreciated the fact that they just kind of came out and cut promos the way they used to cut promos, kind of bullet points, sort of unscripted, and they got in the ring, and I was just really impressed on a wrestler-by-wrestler basis of how good the moves were. And I also appreciated the fact that not everybody's just juiced up gargantuan people. They can be, what's Adam Cole, 200 pounds. Jericho was never the biggest dude, but he cuts the best promos ever. So what have they done since then? Is I was really afraid of if they were going to be able to have production value going on the road. And you can tell that they've come a long way. They'll probably never get as huge as WWE, but just production value, you can tell that they've been working on it. And they get their shots right, and they've got the video board good enough. They got where people can have that one shot coming on, and they've got video going everywhere. And the lighting is better than it used to be. So I think from a production standpoint, I don't know if they've hired – do you know if they've hired more TV people to go on the road since they've started out?
I mean, the main thing they did is hire Mike Mansouri from WWE, who worked under Kevin Dunn, and he's making a big difference to the product. And there are people in AEW who wanted to see improvement, and there just wasn't the bandwidth and the budget and the skill set of the people that were there to do that. And after Keith Mitchell left, the Mike Mansouri hire is big, and it's one of the reasons we're seeing a more polished product with more elbow grease, as I say, put into some of the things that happen between matches. So he's made a real big difference.
Yeah. And it seems like they give their wrestlers more leeway as far as what they're doing on their own. I don't know if WWE would let people have Twitch channels like they do. And, they have their YouTube channels, like the Being the Elite YouTube channels, which I think is pretty cool. That gives you a different perspective on what's going on in their life, and they kind of have their own production style going into those videos. And nowadays, anybody can be their own cable station, basically, if you know how to run After Effects or something like that. But I think I've talked enough, but I just wanted to say how much I enjoy your work, Wade. And I do have one more question. Back in the glory days of the PW Torch message board, there was a poster. His name was FSNB. Do you have any idea whatever happened to him?
No, I don't. I wish I did, but I don't. that sounds like, you know, yeah, that's been a lot. I'd have to dust off the memories to remember most of the handles, the nicknames of the people back in the day. Although it's been fun meeting some people who like I know by real life earth names, human names. And then I find out, oh, you were that person. Oh, now I'm having some emotional reactions to some of the things that I remember you saying. But it's been a long time.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay, cool. Guys. Well,
Johnny,
hey,
thanks for calling.
I appreciate it.
Yep.
Bye.
Yeah, appreciate the kind words. Hopefully we'll hear from you again. Yep. All right, very good. We got VIP member Sam calling up in a few minutes on our VIP priority caller reservation. But first, I want to get to some emails here. We talked about the MJF Jungle Boy promo. JB from Detroit emailed in specifically about that, Eric. I want to get our thoughts on what he has to say. I do like the long-term I do like the long-term storytelling with Hook and Jungle Boy. I think it was Jake Barnett who said several weeks ago that they seem to be alluding to the fact that the two would meet again and team out of necessity. MJF throwing that out there of, mentioning Hook's name and making Jungle Boy question or trying to make Jungle Boy question whether Hook could be loyal to him. What'd you think of that, Eric? We didn't talk about that.
MJF was gaslighting the heck out of poor Jack Perry tonight. You know, your methods haven't worked. You had these friends and they turned on you, right? He's trying to knock his confidence in his path, and Jack Perry confidently stood against that, stood up against that, and that was sort of the emotional core of Perry's promo tonight.
Do you think there's a chance Hook goes heel as just a way to change his character from what it's been to something else? It just because, I mean, in a way, he's been on a bit of a treadmill, a bit spinning his wheels. Just they're kind of holding him in a certain spot, but he hasn't been featured on a weekly basis on Dynamite. Is that hinting at, portending maybe Taz as the maniacal heel father coaching his son who's got an edge to him, or does that not make sense for Hook and in the character that we've seen in the ring style we've seen from him so far?
You could do that eventually. Inevitably, that's probably what will end up happening, right? It's the nature of wrestling. If that means Hook would have to wrestle a match of longer than 5 minutes, I'm not, I still have yet to see whether he's ready for that. He's sort of like a mini Goldberg at this point, right? And he comes in, throws people around with some suplexes, and gets the tap out win. And he doesn't speak. He speaks rarely. And when he does, it's only usually a word or two. So it's hard to say. It seems like they're doing a slow burn, just having a popular character the fans seem to like on the show. But I guess when they feel he is ready for more, we will know it. But certainly a natural feud for Jungle Boy Jack Perry down the road would be against Hook if they wanted to go that way.
Yeah, yeah. I'd be curious to see Hook as a heel and how fans would respond to that. But, I just get the sense that there's a feeling that, they want to bring him along slowly and not expose him as being green because he was so popular because of the things that he's so good at. Which is, exuding charisma without doing a lot, which is not something that a lot of people have. Most people don't have that gift. The vast majority don't have that gift. And, he's got great ring entrance music, sort of carry himself in a distinct, memorable way. But in the ring, he just doesn't have a lot of experience, and it's hard to put him out there on indie shows when, if he's out there having bad matches, as we learned from the house show a couple weekends ago, it's going to turn into an internet, it's going to be all over the place. People are going to watch Hook making mistakes in this era, where before you could kind of hide someone and give them work and it would be off the radar, except for, the hundreds or thousands of fans who are watching in that particular venue. But I could also see him as a heel, as a transition before eventually turning face again. And that would allow him to use some techniques that are more conventional and maybe easier to master, that I think he could be good at. Just the kicking and the stomping and the biting and the back scratching that people would be like, hey, you're supposed to be this judo expert. And now here you are using all these tactics against our beloved Jungle Boy. So, I could envision them trying to go that route, especially if they thought Taz being a spokesperson for him would bring him up to the next level. and give them something more to work with, and then I think they have figured out what to do with him yet. But it also could just be MJF firing blanks and trying to get Jungle Boy on edge about something he has no reason to be on edge about.
If Taz being Hook's mouthpiece and manager results in Jim Ross coming back to Dynamite to do color commentary, I would be vehemently opposed to that.
Shots fired. All right, back to JB. He says, overall, I like the MJF Jungle Boy promo, but there were two things I have to critique. One, Jungle Boy saying he wished he could be as confident as MJF. Do we really need another major babyface full of self-doubt after Hangman? I didn't like it as much with Hangman as I did with Jungle Boy, but I also think saying it in a vacuum is one thing. Saying it opposite of MJF, who is as, you know, brash and cocky as it gets, it felt relatable in this case. With Hangman, it was sort of like mopey and like, come on, just pick yourself up and stop it. You're on national television. You've had world title matches. You're a superstar. With Perry, it's just more like, yeah, you're contrasting my approach to my career to yours. And there are things that probably would have served me advancing quicker, but it came around in the end too, but I don't want to advance that way. I'd rather do it with class and integrity. Eric, what do you think?
I'm trying not to react to your burial of Hangman Page, former AEW champion, anxious millennial cowboy.
JB,
I mean, I think most human beings on earth lack confidence compared to MJF. That is a fair assessment.
Yes, very much so. Okay. He also said, MJF bringing up Jungle Boy dating Anna Jay. Has that ever been brought up on AWTV before, and is it best to bring that to the attention as JB is clearly a face and Jay a heel with JAS? He also had the argument that, you know, it's probably still the case to a degree, but more difficult in the social media era, you want the wrestlers who are meant to appeal to, in part, the females in the audience who are screeching for them, you want them to think that wrestler is available, not taken. It's kind of hard in this era to hide your personal life unless you choose to. You know, like Sami Zayn didn't talk a lot about his wife and kids until somewhat recently. And there's a lot of wrestlers who are like that and protective of their family and don't want to bring them into their careers or social media. But there's something to that, you know, could hurt. But then you have the aspect of the kayfabe, the so-called kayfabe or consistency aspect of what's wrong with Jungle Boy if he's wanting to hang out with Anna Jay. So, Eric, your thoughts?
I mean, in the 80s, I don't recall Ricky Morton of the Rock and Roll Express, teenage heartthrob. I don't recall him ever talking about having a girlfriend or a wife.
Right.
Because there's a saying probably can't, I don't know if you could say it in the year 2023. What is it? The guys want to be like you and the girls want to F you. That was the babyface approach back in the
day. The guys want to be like you and the women want to be with you.
Yeah.
Is the cleaned up version. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, is that still probably optimal? I don't know. I don't think Jungle Boy and Anna Jay have made too much of a secret on social media that they are a couple. And then the other thing would be, as I'm looking at my iPad here, second screen, you know, they're doing this all access backstage look, and I'm going to guess that, you know, this possibly comes up at some point during that show, right? It would not surprise me if those two canoodling backstage comes up. So you also can try and monetize that, I suppose, through providing Warner Brothers Discovery with an hour of content. So I guess that's probably the way to go in 2023, whereas you point out there's social media and it's hard to keep things private.
Yeah. All right, number 3 says, why was the BCC allowed to attack Dalton Castle and the boys before the match? And then the match immediately starts and they get the quick, cheap pin, and it seems like all three announcers are in favor of what is seemingly a very dishonorable heel move. They did sort of get to take advantage of that all the way through. They're better about it later with Orange Cassidy. There was a very deliberate attempt to make sure Orange Cassidy made it clear to the referee he could have all the ref said, you can have the time if you need, let me know when you're ready. And Cassidy took a few seconds and then stood up and said, you know, bring it on, I'm ready. I am an advocate for that. Yeah, this was presented differently in that way. They just plowed through them, including benefiting from an illegal pre-match attack. So, yeah, I mean, that is a valid critique. Eric?
Well, my guess is the opening segment and post-match angle went long, and so they needed to cut time, although it would not surprise me in the least. In fact, probably it's the case that BCC was penciled in for just a quick squash over people that could be squashed. Dalton Castle was protected by, you know, being beaten up by John Moxley, top star, outside the ring, and the boys are expendable. And you also build heat on the heels, and they are certainly, after tonight and last week and the week before, no shortage of attempts to put heat on the Blackpool Combat Club. So all seem to make sense to me from an angle. And it, you know, it happened before the bell, so it's kind of a no man's land, what happens before the bell.
He adds, this iteration of the BCC is reminding me of the original Shield in that their story is intertwined with several stories across the show. Also, I think they're doing a great job in that they're getting legitimate heel heat, which I didn't think would be easy to do. So let's use that as a pass to talking about Bryan Danielson's return. Said he was going to take time off after losing to MJF, and now he's back. And he feigned being on the side of Omega. The crowd is chanting no, not wanting him to attack Omega, which again is a credit to Omega, and I think shows that the fan base, the ticket buying fans, in addition to the minute by minute number showing the TV viewers, are ready to embrace Kenny Omega as a singles lead centerpiece babyface act, and they didn't want Danielson to turn on him, and they booed him when he did. What do you think about Danielson being okay with, more than okay with? He might be the mastermind behind it, the BCC's new approach, and one other layer to it, is it, if Don Callis, is Don Callis staying heel, and is it productive if you've got four popular wrestlers trying to get booed, punching out Don Callis before they go out there and get heel heat against Omega? There's, you know, some layering and nuance or whatever to that that could create a little bit of a headwind, but it might ultimately be worth it. So your thoughts?
You could have, I assumed it was a swerve and Danielson was going to attack Omega, given their, you know, history of having matches in AEW. You could have, you've got 8 weeks to build to whatever multi-man, you know, or Anarchy in the Arena, whatever kind of match they're clearly building to between these two factions at Double or Nothing at the end of May in Las Vegas. You could have had a week where Danielson saves Omega and is unsure about what to do, because you have the time to build that, and or you could have had him attack him right away with a swerve, and they went with that way, and I think it's fine. I think it got huge heat. It really added to the news of the because on paper tonight's Dynamite was, I'm like, I looked at it and I'm like, well, there's six matches. If you could bet on wrestling in any kind of meaningful way, you could, you know, go 6-0 in a 6-way parlay, and because you could tell who was going to win every match, and they did not have any upsets tonight. I was 6-0 in my predictions, but so was everybody else who would have done the same exercise. So this angle was a major heat angle, and it provided a ton of, you know, a big news angle for the show. Big time angle, a lot of heat. The one sort of, you know, gap that has not been filled in yet, or maybe this was their way of filling it in. So Daniels, you'll recall last November after Full Gear, William Regal is doing his departure promo, and he's getting beat up by Moxley, who he has just betrayed, giving MJF the title. And Danielson comes out to save Regal. And then after that, we really – it never kind of never got resolved why, you know, Danielson explained why he saved Regal, but they didn't really show the fallout in the Blackpool Combat Club. And during that whole Danielson MJF feud and build that culminated at Revolution earlier this month, Danielson was not around the Blackpool Combat Club at all, right? I don't recall him interacting with them in any way as BCC started their heel turn. So, something they could, you know, if they want to, they could explain that. Yeah, guys, I was on my own path, but I see that, you know, me being the good guy didn't, you know, didn't result in me winning the AEW World title and MJF cheated by hitting me with the oxygen tank and he won, right? You know, there's room for him to explain that. And they may do that next week because I think they teased a Blackpool Combat Club. And they already interview next week, and they already started to Danielson himself started to tease what the angle, his rationale is by saying, as he's beating up Kenny Omega, you're everything that's wrong with wrestling. You're everything that's wrong with wrestling. And so, it is probably the best thing going in AEW today, this angle.
Up next, he says, where is this, will the Acclaimed join Jericho Appreciation Society storyline going? Well, it's going to the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn laughing in their faces, but liking a night on the town on Jericho's credit card. That's my take. What did you think about that, though? Is this productive? Is this a good angle? Is it cheesy? Is it kind of productive? Is it intriguing? Where are you on this?
I agree with you that the Acclaimed and Mr. Gunn are not going to be joining JAS. I think it's to give them something to do, right? To give the Acclaimed something to do since they're no longer in the title picture. They didn't get the titles back in the four-way tag match at the pay-per-view, and they will feud with a opponents who can go on the mic a little bit in Mad Daddy Magic and Angelo with the switchblade comb guy, Parker, and it'll give them something to do on TV as they sort of, you know, I don't want to say tread water because I'm sure they're still selling merchandise and they're still drawing ratings, but you know, you need something to do to keep the Acclaimed on TV with a feud when they're not in the title picture, something that AEW, you know, sometimes people get forgotten, and they haven't forgotten the Acclaimed, probably because Tony Khan looks at the minutes and sees people want to see them.
Also, JB closes with this. Are we getting Adam Cole versus Chris Jericho at Double or Nothing? We certainly had hints of that. Jericho coming out to help Danny Garcia out of the ring and kind of looking over his shoulder resentfully at Adam Cole being back and getting all this attention and beating one of his guys. Is it just sort of apparent that that's the direction they're going? And then what do you think about it?
Yeah, it seems it seems fairly obvious if you look at AEW booking patterns that they are going to build a match between Adam Cole and Chris Jericho at the pay-per-view. An interesting result because New Japan Pro Wrestling would have had Adam Cole lose his first night back against Daniel Garcia under the rationale that he's rusty and you know, if you're ever going to lose because you're rusty, you lose your first night back. They do that all the time. And you do that because you plausibly can lose, and it sets up you getting your win back later. You know, they have tournaments and whatnot throughout the year. AEW didn't do that because they know that doing so would have cut the legs out from under Adam Cole right as he's just getting going, and they're hoping he'll be a hot babyface. In his return, he also, as evidenced tonight by the first episode of AEW All Access, is going to be a focal point of that show, his road to recovery. I think the culmination is, you know, they're building, I don't know if they solved it tonight, but to him getting a doctor's appointment before, as he wants to return at full gear. I mean, spoiler alert, we know he didn't return at full gear, so they have not done Adam Cole and Chris Jericho, and it seems like it makes sense. I thought the ending of the show was falling flat because Jericho's going up the ramp with Daniel Garcia, and there's no music, and there doesn't seem to be a lot going on. And then they hit Cole's music, and I guess it turned out okay. Did you notice that? Did you make anything of it?
I just kept waiting for something to happen. It did seem like Jericho kind of had to go twice to kind of halfway looking over his shoulder, and it did feel drawn out, like maybe they had an extra 15 seconds to fill. It wasn't a big deal, but yeah, it created a sense of what's happening here. And I can imagine a little panic in the back because they're trying to do a good, you know, they want the All Access show to inherit a good rating.
Yeah. And you know, hitting Cole's music. Then they did the streamers, right? In the ring,
yeah.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Or had they already done the streamers, maybe?
I think they did streamers, but
yeah. So, yeah. That people would be talking about the ending falling flat had they not hit Adam Cole's music.
Yes,
so, smart move on their part.
Yeah, very much. All right, our number is 347-215-8558. If you are just joining us after watching AEW All Access, you're welcome to give us a call and give your thoughts on Dynamite or the premiere episode of All Access. 347-215-8558. 888-253-5558. You can also email the show, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. Up next, our VIP priority caller is Sam from Nebraska. Sam, good to hear from you again. Welcome to the show. What are your thoughts on tonight's Dynamite?
Sure. I enjoyed tonight's show. I enjoyed last week's also. What I find is very encouraging to me in terms of, like, kind of, I think, a pivot in how AEW is presenting their shows is that this week and last week, there was much more of a intra-episode story that's kind of going on, that's kind of like showing you kind of like what's important, you know, going with, you know, a big complaint even myself has had with, particularly with Kenny Omega returning, is just he hasn't seemed like a big deal. And it's like, there's a lot focused around Kenny Omega and what watch and know that he's a big deal. And I just enjoyed that it's seeing how they're developing, you know, obviously it's not going to change overnight, but they're doing things that I think are very encouraging for how they're going to present their television.
I am for Kenny Omega getting a chance to, or not just say get a chance, but stepping up and having the storyline being weaved throughout the show last week and this week with what happened to the Bucks and what happened to Hangman Page and Callis, and then a follow-up on it. And yes, a refresher video package on it that was then used to forward, the storyline with Callis, who's, you know, roaming around talking to Kenny, and then he's talking to Hangman. A lot of things just were layered and it made watching the show feel like there's something happening now that's going to affect or be followed up on later. And there are times Dynamite's felt like you could just, you know, randomly shuffle the segments and rearrange the show and nothing would be out of order because everything was kind of standing on its own. Eric, your thoughts on what Sam's bringing up here?
Yeah, I know we've talked already about the post Kenny Omega Jeff Cobb match angle with Bryan Danielson, but there were two other segments to Sam's point earlier in the show. One was Callis sort of did a reverse gaslighting on Kenny. So they followed up, you know, we left Dynamite last week with Don Callis faking that Adam Cole had hit him and Kenny looking askew at Hangman Page. And it was obvious to anybody that for there was a miscommunication or, you know, Kenny was being, had the wool pulled over his eyes by Don Callis. And the question was, well, hey, if Kenny Omega just watches, does he not set his DVR to watch Dynamite? Because if he does, he'll see Don Callis as being a scumbag here and faking it to keep Page and Omega apart. And so they answered that this week with Callis saying, oh, he didn't actually hit me. Sorry, I lost my balance. He has a tight grip. And Callis turning it back on Kenny saying, why did you think that Hangman punched me? And
yep.
Kenny is, you know, if you watch Being the Elite, Kenny's just kind of a goofball and that does not ever rarely comes across as a serious person.
Exactly.
And he's deadpans with a, because he hit you before, which is just great. I got a big laugh out of that. And then they came back as they were out of the recap with Callis making good on his pledge to go explain it all to Hangman Page. And just as Hangman Page is like, really, you actually want to shake my hand? He gets attacked by the Blackpool Combat Club. And my thought was initially that Callis is in cahoots right now with the Blackpool Combat Club, and that was his way to distract Hangman Page so that they could attack him. And even when Callis got hit by Moxley, I thought, oh, this is still part of the angle. He's eventually going to turn on the Elite. And Callis did a blade job, and I'm like, oh, maybe not. I have a hard time believing Don Callis is going to be a babyface because he plays a heel so well naturally. What did you guys think? Callis being set up to turn on the Elite and join the Blackpool Combat Club where he doesn't really seem like a natural fit?
It crossed my mind, but I mean, you can't attack Moxley. I mean, that I think that's ruled out now. So I don't know. I mean, I'm intrigued, and I just don't think Don Callis has it in him to be a particularly effective babyface. But he is getting more TV time, and I called for it. I mean, I wanted Callis to not just be a guy who just comes out and says a few things on commentary during Kenny's matches, but, you know, gets introduced to the larger Dynamite audience in a way where there's some knowledge of who he is and what he stands for, and he's not just this hanger-on who gets to show up and get a paycheck for almost, yeah, almost literally just phoning it in, just sort of being there and saying a few things about Kenny. So I think Callis is talented, and they had to figure out how to get heel heat on him, or if they think he can be an effective babyface manager, at least for a while, then go with that. But I just don't want him taking up space on TV unless they develop his character and give people a reason to feel an emotion, some emotion when they see him. So we're on that road. But I, to me, like, he should be a heel manager opposite of Kenny, and the Takeshita thing seems like they're still heading that direction. So I guess my top hunch is he's going to turn on Hangman and Kenny, and he's going to turn some people to the dark side, like maybe Takeshita. Or others he'll recruit, and that'll set up some matches where there'll be a Callis, Don Callis faction taking on babyface Kenny and Hangman in the Bucks, and that makes the most sense. But they've eliminated that he's behind Blackpool Combat Club. I think that eliminates it. I mean, you don't get hit and bleed if the idea is haha, we got you because I did a blade job. Like, my God, please don't do that. Sam, what do you think?
Yeah, I guess what I am liking is just it seems like we're getting we're going somewhere right now with this stuff with Don, and just kind of the storyline in general is like something kind of has to happen. It seems like for so long, especially with Don and Kenny and stuff, like the wheels have been just kind of spinning for ages, and just like ideally, you know, of course, knock on wood, something is going to get forced to happen storyline wise. Like, so something has to change. And there has to be some sort of development. And that's, we'll just see exactly what that is. And yeah, right now I'm not quite sure, you know, I kind of, especially with the blade job, I kind of figured, yeah, this seems like kind of ruling him out with the Blackpool Combat Club. So that's interesting to me. And I admit, like the Takeshita stuff, I guess since I don't watch a lot of the shoulder programming or even like Rampage, it just seems like it's something that's just like vaguely mentioned on Dynamite. Hasn't happened a whole lot on the main shows. It seems like it just seems like I haven't seen a lot. I mean, I know it's happening, but yeah, it's I more hear about it when you guys talk about it as opposed to actually seeing it.
Yeah.
So I'll see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else about the show tonight?
No, I mean, I thought it was a pretty solid enough show. And yeah, I just wanted to thank you for doing this where I can email in so I can call in.
Absolutely. Great. Well, so. Yes. Yeah. Yep. I appreciate you calling in. Good to hear from you again.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, Sam. Thanks for being a VIP member too. Eric, overall on the show, Sam liked the show overall. We've had some good feedback on the show overall. What was this a above average and really good episode of Dynamite, or where does it fall for you?
Yeah, I mean, on paper, I thought, this seems like a fairly predictable show, and some of the matches will be good, and but it didn't seem like it was going to be a hot show, and I thought it was. They had some good angles, mostly due to the angles. It was a nice blend of furthering long-term match builds, the MJF four-way title match presumably at Double or Nothing, and the BCC Elite storyline. So they did a lot of that, and they did a decent job of teasing next week's, you know, quote, bigger show in Long Island, right, where they seem to be. They've got a careers versus titles tag team title match with FTR and the Guns, who gave a serious promo, and I was like, holy, I can't stand the Guns, and I'm like, I get that part of it is because that's the gimmick, that's the heel heat, and it works with me. I greatly dislike them, but they gave a serious promo tonight that was pretty darn good.
Yeah,
and you know, even that little thing, like the act that I think is often a weak part of the show, and shouldn't have the tag belts. There's so many better tag teams on the roster. They delivered, and then I would also note, we got a Book of Hobbs segment and not a QTV segment. So
yeah,
I'll take that 52 weeks out of 52.
It's a victory not getting a QTV segment. I mean, it didn't bomb in the minute-by-minute numbers that I went over this weekend. But you know, I think you can look at that and think, yeah, this probably isn't.
Not maybe didn't bomb commercially, but critically it was a disaster.
Yeah. And I mean, where do you go? Where do you go with it? All right, cool. Well, let's shift to another email here, and we'll go to Azan in St. Louis, who wasn't able to attend tonight, but he did say, do you think Tony Khan will go with a serious version of Anarchy in the Arena with BCC at Double or Nothing this year as the main event instead of an MJF match? Eric.
That's generally not how Tony Khan books it. He books the world title as the most important thing, and so he usually puts it last. I think there maybe been one or two exceptions, and one of them was during the pandemic when they had that the Elite versus the Jericho, his first heel stable, right? But not the Jericho Appreciation Society, but the other one. I can't even remember what they were called. Inner Circle. Right, they did that in was it 2020 at Double or Nothing when they had that match in the Jacksonville football stadium where the Jacksonville Jaguars mascot got involved and they were down on the field. And the, I think they main evented with that, and it was a mostly a pre-tape, I think. Last year they did have a serious Anarchy in the Arena match with Moxley's crew and including Eddie Kingston, right? Against, who was it against? Was it Jericho's team? Was it Jericho Appreciation Society, I think? Maybe they were new at that point. And it, you know, it got a lot of votes in Match of the Year polls, and that's the one where Danielson got injured with a concussion for a while. And so, yeah, I certainly think they are headed toward that match. I'm curious if Matt Jackson can do such a match with a torn bicep, is it? Partially torn bicep? Are you back in, you know, they got 8 more weeks. If the injury happened in Winnipeg, that'd be sort of 2.5 months he would have to recover, and he's not getting surgery. So can you tape it up and not injure yourself worse and do that match? Because then you have a natural 4 versus 4 with Danielson back. I think that match last year might have been 5 versus 5. I don't know if you need a fifth person on either team. Probably not. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah. I think they could headline with that if they – if the vision is this is so many of our top stars in one match, and it's a tradition, and it's kind of hard to follow based on what they envision for it, then you can do an MJF match that isn't like this epic one-on-one match, but is the four-pillar thing. It would explain why they're putting, in theory, 3 weaker opponents from a marquee historical main event track record standpoint against MJF and setting that up as secondary. They could still headline with that, by the way, and just put the men's world title on last. That is, you know, he did that last year, but it was CM Punk and Hangman Page. So, you know, that in theory is a bigger match than, you know, the pillars all fighting each other. But maybe by the time we get, you know, to Double or Nothing, it actually feels as big or bigger with the hype that they do and the promos they cut. But yeah, I think it's a worthwhile question to ask for sure. And I'm not against headlining up with an annual gimmick match if it has this kind of star power and this kind of heat behind it.
Does that undercut MJF and the three young, you know, the rest of the four pillars by not putting them on last?
I mean, yes, by definition, but you're doing it because you believe it isn't as big as a one-on-one, you know, kind of epic match between MJF and one established opponent. But sometimes you just admit, you know, you just admit, hey, this is a level below some of our one-on-one matches we've had for the world title. Doesn't mean it's not going to be appealing and attractive and it's pay-per-view worthy, but you know, we've loaded this other matchup. So it's the right time to do it. I mean, there's, you know, the bigger match for WWE is WrestleMania, not typically the world title match at the Royal Rumble or on a December pay-per-view. And so, you know, there's no shame in that. I know AEW has run many pay-per-views and MJF doesn't wrestle very often. So, you know, in that sense, it's different, but I don't think it would be, I don't think it would have any kind of lasting damaging effect on MJF for the world title because, again, of the star power and the format of the match that would follow it if they went on last with it.
I think there might have been Double or Nothing 2021. The main, I think it was the main event. Certainly was the world title match. It was Kenny Omega and Orange Cassidy and Pac. And it seemed like a thrown-together match that they didn't really build that much, right?
They did Stadium Stampede after that. They actually did finish that pay-per-view with Stadium Stampede. So, and that was a thrown-together match. So, I mean, I would say MJF against the Pillars is significantly bigger than Kenny Omega against Orange Cassidy and Pac. But you're right. Yeah, that was the semifinal that year. So, yeah, I mean, for sure, it seems like a possibility. All right. Azan also says, do you think AW All Access will be positive or negative for the company? I've only had it on the background. I did hear that one of the first things being talked about is you know, someone complimenting Tony Khan for being a visionary and creating something wonderful and great. I don't know how much of there that was after that. But I kept an eye on it, but I haven't heard it. I like the behind the scenes access visually. I think it's cool, but I don't know if they went further than I think they should in terms of, you know, breaking character. I know they had a graphic on the screen, you know, saying Adam Cole, but they use his real name, AKA Adam Cole. And I don't know how vital that is, but it just seems like they're going for, you know, realism points by doing that. So I really can't judge yet, having not heard the sound or paid close attention. But Eric, you've seen more of it than me. What's the answer to Azan's question, positive or negative?
I mean, I liked the first half hour, you know, the first half of it that I saw, the aforementioned wrestling dentist burying a lot of Thunder Rosa, and then sort of coming back to that a little. I really laughed hysterically. They had a Matt Jackson interview. They talk about the Bucks getting stripped of the six-man titles. They show the video of Tony Khan being on TV and doing that. And Matt Jackson says something to the effect of, I could be a black mark on our careers. I don't want to talk about it. So, like, they don't explain, oh, we got no problem with CM Punk, right? So they want the benefit, at least, you know, maybe they came back to it. I saw on Twitter, I think later in the show, the Bucks talked about maybe retiring after the events of All Out. And I don't know. They have more weeks of this show, right? So it's possible they'll go there, but the early returns are legal team still winning, thinking CM Punk has a potential lawsuit against us for bringing him back before he was medically cleared to wrestle in that squash, 10 days before All Out last year. Maybe let's not talk about it on TV, lest it become Exhibit A in the lawsuit.
Right, exactly. Okay, and then finally he says, do you think, he sent this in about 15 minutes before the end of the Dynamite, but he said, do you think not a mention of the RH pay-per-view tonight is a bit surprising, especially with the RH World Champ being a huge part of the show? So they ended up mentioning it, Eric, but that is noteworthy. This Tony Khan listened to the criticism, or he just feels ROH is in a different place now, and it's got to stand on its own. But it hasn't been a heavy push for ROH, and their streaming service has been minimally mentioned by AEW, not hard sold. And the pay-per-view this Friday got, you know, mentioned, and they put graphics in the corner, and Excalibur talked about it, but it was, you know, during the main event match, and, you know, not much time was dedicated to it. So obviously the priority for priority for AEW is Dynamite ratings, as they, you know, look forward to negotiating a new TV deal and getting a lot more revenue coming in. And that's way more important than ROH getting a few more subscribers or buys this weekend. And since there was pushback and it was a down period for ratings when ROH is getting so much attention, and I know Tony, you know, rationalized it and tried to explain, you know, why he did it and why he thinks some of the pushback was a little overblown or uncalled for. But that said, this did seem like an acknowledgement. Let's downplay it. Let's focus on AEW Dynamite, on AEW happening. So did they find a happy medium, or did they pull back too much, Eric?
I mean, they did, I think, tape the tomorrow night's ROH TV show before Dynamite tonight in St. Louis. I have not seen spoilers on it and wouldn't want to spoil it for anybody if I had. So even if they did pull back, obviously. It's actually weird. So they've only got, I thought Tony, maybe somebody else had said they have 12,000 Ring of Honor subscribers. I am one of them, newly minted since they started the weekly show. And this Supercard of Honor is actually a sneaky good pay-per-view. Like, it deserves some promotion.
Yeah, it is sneaky.
They have added, you know, there's the world title match. Eddie Kingston and Claudio will probably be good and interesting. They've got a tag team ladder match for the tag team titles that has some good teams in it. I think Aussie Open and Top Flight are two of them. And then this week they added, with like not a ton of build and hardly any promotion, they added Katsuyori Shibata against Wheeler Yuta, right? Which will be an interest, you know, similar styles there. And then Tony Khan just announced, as we've been podcasting here, Hiroshi Tanahashi and Daniel Garcia. So, because Hiroshi's going to be in town for that JW Impact show where Tanahashi is substituting for the injured Will Ospreay. So it actually will be a decent show to watch, and it's a shame that I think the buy rate may not be as good because it hasn't had the benefit of being promoted every week on Dynamite, even if that is probably the right thing to do. And I think Tony Khan did turn some people off with all the ROH, you know, incessant ROH-ness last year.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's go to Joe B., who says, hi, Wade and Eric. I was just sick for a few days, and reading the 1988 Observer newsletters, and Eric Kroll had a spirited letter to the editor about how WCW fans have so much more decorum than WWF fans. 35 years later, I think you nailed it. Do you remember that, Eric?
I have no recollection of this. I did, but thank you. It's possible. Let's see, 1988, I would have been 17 years old. I would have been writing letters to the Observer and the Torch at the time. I did get a laugh. I saw this week or last week that it was the 35th anniversary of the Dusty Rhodes Midnight Rider angle.
Yeah.
The Horsemen are giving Magnum TA some of the business, and Dusty, I think probably post-car accident, Magnum TA. And Dusty Rhodes attacks the Horsemen with like a baseball bat, I think, and it nails a couple of the Crockett family along the way, so they suspend him, and this mysterious masked figure comes in on a horse. Back before a music copyright law was a thing, to Willie Nelson's Midnight Rider. And it was voted the worst angle of the year by the Observer newsletter readers in 1988, and 17-year-old me loved that angle. I couldn't get enough of Dusty on a, you know, obviously Dusty, but, you know, quote-unquote not Dusty on TV, because I was 17 and hadn't seen that they did it in Florida 6 years earlier or whatever. And I think in the end, I remember in the 90s being way more annoyed by all the signs at WCW Nitros in Chicago than I was at WWE fans. So I'm not sure. It was, you know, remember the 90s were the era of everybody bringing signs to wrestling events and you couldn't see anything because
yes.
You were blocked by a guy.
Totally.
With a sign that probably had a typo and a possessive error on it. And
listen to you.
Yeah. I'm channeling my inner Wade, former newspaper editor-ness.
Yes.
And it was quite a time. So I'm not sure that was the correct take in the long run. Might've been the take in 1988.
Yeah. That's fun. So he goes on to say, this was a great Dynamite with great production and storyline throughout. It felt like a much heavier focus on the AEW originals and Adam Cole and made everything so much more fun. This is 2 weeks in a row of really well-booked shows, and it feels to me like AEW has some of its magic back. P.S. All Access is amazing. Britt Baker has more character development in 4 minutes in the past 3 years on AEW television. Thanks, and go VIP. I'm also an old Torch message board poster, JB in Jacksonville. Well, fun. VIP former. It's somewhere on the server. I just can't get to it. I don't know my old password to even get in there. Yes, I mean, what do you agree with that sentiment? And again, I mean, I think the ratings have scared Tony a little bit, scared him straight, so to speak, into maybe looking at some things that he was doing. And I think Mike Mansouri is part of this. And yeah, I mean, it does feel like the last 2 weeks are different than what we had been seeing for that. Without it, you know, drawing a ton of attention to itself, I just think they're addressing some things that I think were issues that undercut some of the things they're trying to do, and I think they're trying to do a little bit more with the density of the booking and the intra-show storylines we throw out.
It has seemed to me, especially this week, a week when we are not, neither of us are nitpicking the sort of gaps in logic or, hey, this didn't make sense aspects that you sometimes would get on Dynamites, that maybe it is possible. Maybe you should dig into this, putting on your reporter hat. Is it possible that AEW finally hired the quality control coordinator that you and Todd Martin have been calling for 2 or 3 years now? Is that possible? Because that was the first thought that ran into my head. It feels like there's somebody who's like sort of on a whiteboard making sure this all makes sense and that there's no logic lapses aren't there. And it's quite a turnaround because the first post Revolution Dynamite was March 8th, and I remember hating that show. Like that was the one that ended with Wardlow losing the TV title to Will Hobbs, and you know, but it wasn't really an elevation of Will Hobbs so much as it was a look at me. I'm QT. I help time out the shows, and I'm on. You know, I'm have Tony Khan's ears, so I am pushing myself. And then, you know, there's also not been Jeff Jarrett and his crew the last 2 weeks. So that's addition by subtraction. So yeah, it feels like they got a solid direction of where they want to go for, you know, between now and Double or Nothing. And that's good to see. Now, ratings wise, I know making too much out of 1 week is generally unwise in TV ratings. I don't know how strong episode 8 of the Vanderpump Rules was on Bravo tonight. I know they ran some sort of gimmicked social media angle that has really improved their ratings this season. So, you know, do we go back to a drop in the last, you know, in the last 45 minutes of Dynamite, like we saw the, you know, before last week when Vikingo helped them, you know, helped them increase the ratings for the last hour. Do we see that drop off again from, you know, 8:15 Central to 9 o'clock? I think they were saving Adam Cole's return for that. I'm not sure. I'm curious to see. I guess we'll know by 3 o'clock tomorrow or so, Central time.
Yeah. Yep. No, I'm interested. I mean, there's going to be some predictable ebb and flow to the ratings depending on what, you know, what the competition is. But you don't want to ever just wave the white flag and give up. You want to put your best show out there all the time. And these are better shows right now. So yeah. Okay. Up next, Zach in Texas said, the storytelling has really tightened up in AEW. I sense a theme here. The BCC really feel like a menacing threat, the bullies. Callis is obviously still working his angle with Kenny at the same time, so this should be interesting. Maybe the BCC attack on him changes his perspective. Who knows? OC continues his streak of excellent matches. Any guesses on who finally ends his win streak and takes his title? I will pause there, Eric. Any thoughts on that?
I don't have an immediate thought. It should be a heel they want to elevate, obviously. So who could that be? I mean, Sammy Guevara's already had the TNT title a couple times. I'd have to look at the roster and give it some thought. I guess you could do a Daniel Garcia. He's been eating some... Well, I guess he's been trading wins and losses recently. You could give it to Daniel Garcia. I mean, I guess it depends on what you want to do with the belt. I know you've noted, Wade, that they've turned the international, newly rechristened international title into a TV title, basically.
Yeah.
It's defended every week. If that's going to be what that belt is used for going forward, because the TNT title has sort of had a very uneven last year or 15 months ever since, you know, Cody's departure and all of that. And it was on seemingly changing hands every other week. If you're going to make the international title the TV title, you want someone who can draw ratings in that segment and who can wrestle good matches, right? That's always a premium, always an emphasis on that on AEW TV. So does Daniel Garcia have the charisma for that? Is he going to draw ratings? I don't know.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I don't have a good idea of who it will be or who it should be.
Swerve, what about Swerve?
Yeah, he'd be like the best guy. It actually jumped out to me when I saw him on the All Access show early on. I'm like, yeah, they need to be doing more with him. So that's actually a good pick. Cause I mean, nobody else is jumping out to me as making a lot of sense, including, you know, especially just based on kind of where everybody is right now, on the roster. I mean, I guess Pac could come back. They could Christian Cage, if he was healthy and ready, you could give Ethan Page a rub. You know, Jay Lethal, no. Yeah, I mean, it's just, there's not a lot of depth, right, on the heel side that for a TV title level wrestler who seems like, oh, yeah, they're the person to get a bump. So I just say, you know, stick with Orange Cassidy for a while.
Do you have any particular insight on why we have not gotten the Keith Lee Swerve match? I know they turned it – is somebody injured? They turned it into a tag at – was it on television? I don't think it was on the pay-per-view, was it? It was another pre-show. Dustin and Keith Lee, they did a little angle where they took out the two goofy henchmen who couldn't work. And Roberts, and then they had the tag match with Swerve with the faces winning, but then there's hardly been a mention of it since, so I don't...
Yeah, no,
is he injured again, or, I don't know.
Keith Lee is not as mobile as he probably needs to be to have the faith of management, but that was, you know, the trajectory that he was on in WWE, and he did not correct course. So, you know, it could just be losing, you know, being disenchanted with him because his performances have not been impressive.
I know, but
you know,
then, and that's fine if that's the case, yeah. But then use him to put over Swerve to get him.
The next level. I'm with you. And that's where I guess I'll ask him. I hadn't. Yeah. It's, you know, AEW sometimes just drops stuff for a while to prioritize other things. So, you know, you can be like, oh, what's going on? Like, oh, nothing. You just,
yeah,
we'll get to it.
It occurred to me when I was speaking that it is entirely possible they have this penciled in for the pay-per-view at the end of May, and
yeah.
We're going to have eight more weeks of this build, which means that it would have been a six-month build for one stinking match, which is not the first time that's happened. But, you know, a little bit frustrating.
All right, Zach also says the women's division continues to chug along nicely, although I was disappointed Riho didn't have her pipe tonight. No, I'm not. That opening promo, though, I think I enjoyed that as much as you did, Wade. Yay. Both guys nailed their parts, but I got to ask, how is referring to Jack's off-screen relationship with Anna Jay or MJF's breakup not a violation of your notoriously strict narrative structure policy? Well, again, don't be too broad and simple-minded, like Eric can be sometimes, with thinking everything applies. Like I'm against all, like I want all video packages all the time, and they're always good. There's this whole vast middle ground between, you know, just some blanket policy. I mean, I'm not particularly crazy about it, but, you know, but I don't see it as something egregious because it doesn't break the narrative structure. It's Jungle Boy wasn't being portrayed as single on television. It just wasn't brought up. And now MJF brought it up. And, you know, does it make a ton of sense if one's a babyface and one's a heel and people question the judgment of them being together? That's not ideal. So, I mean, but this is very low on the scale of breaking narrative structure. It's just introducing, you know, maybe a little head tilt for some Jungle Boy fans who are like, what? Wait, really? Oh, that's weird. But that's been the case with Seth and Becky at times, with their characters over in WWE too, or Adam Cole and Britt Baker at times. There hasn't been a lot of congruency necessarily between their on-air characters aligning as a natural couple. But, I mean, my inclination would have been to scratch that reference, but mostly because I think Jungle Boy should seem available. I think that's better for him. Anything to add to that, Eric?
Nothing that wouldn't upset you, so we can just move on.
Well, wait a second. No, I don't want you to hold back for my sake. What?
I think the short answer to that question, Zach in Texas, is when Wade likes something, it doesn't break Wade's unwritten rules of baseball. And when Wade doesn't like something, then it does break the unwritten rules of baseball. I'm just looking for, you know,
that is a definition.
Definition, right. I'm just looking for a definition of when. Doing the backstage stuff is bad versus when it's good.
If you will stop talking, I can explain it to you. I get what you're saying. So here's the policy. If it's a real sport and if it's being portrayed as it's a simulated sport, but everything on TV should be portrayed as real. Nothing about having a girlfriend with a bad attitude breaks narrative structure. It's just acknowledging that maybe JB has Jungle Boy Jack Perry has questionable taste or surprising taste in women. It doesn't break if wrestling were real and everything we see on screen was meant to portray reality, that works. If Jungle Boy was in a storyline relationship with Jamie Hayter and then MJF said, "Oh, but what about your real life girlfriend?" Well, that's what I'm talking about. That's narrative structure breaking. So I'm glad you asked, and now I've clarified, and there is a logic to what I did. And no, Eric, this is to me applying rules inconsistently due to what I like and don't like. So does that help you understand?
Yeah, I'll pay closer attention now that I know what the rules of the game are. It still seems like that one Supreme Court justice who infamously said, "I know pornography when I see it," right? I know it breaks the narrative structure when I see it. And
so how does that – if you heard what I said, how does – that break the narrative structure to say Jungle Boy has a girlfriend? It doesn't.
Well, in that it hadn't been established in the narrative that, he, you know.
It hadn't been established he did or didn't. It's introducing a new piece of information that doesn't clash with anything. That's why my last example was if Jungle Boy had a relationship on air that wasn't real, and then MJF goes, well, let's get real for a minute, and then talked about a real-life girlfriend, that's breaking the narrative structure. Acknowledging, introducing a new piece of information that doesn't go against anything that's ever been said on TV before does nothing to break the narrative structure. So it's kind of a silly argument, to be honest, once you understand where I'm coming from.
So if MJF had said tonight, remember when you jobbed to me, Jack Perry, that would have broken the narrative structure, correct?
Of course, okay. Yeah.
I feel like this was a lot easier in the Vince Russo WCW era when there was stuff that was so obviously horrible and terrible that we could all unite around that because we all knew it when we saw it. The finger poke of doom, you know, the Jeff Jarrett, Hulk Hogan nonsense, all of that stuff that everybody instantly was repulsed by.
Yeah, yeah. True there. All right. Let's see. Grant emailed and said, I just want to say I called the Bryan Danielson heel turn weeks ago and said that it would lead to Omega Danielson 2. And your co-host at the time told me that was wrong. So I'm going to pat myself on the back. I'm glad it was a co-host. But with this happening, was it you, Eric? But with this happening, do you think
not
these...
me.
Okay. But with this happening, do you think these are the two teams we get for Blood and Guts in June? Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm happy about it. Matt Jackson being the asterisk, and I don't know who could substitute for him. Probably not Brandon Cutler or Michael Nakazawa or Don Callis, but Takeshita? I don't know.
Yeah, they could do that.
Could be, yeah.
Yeah.
He's a really good worker and is popular.
Yeah. So I think we – by the way, I agree with you. The Guns had a good promo tonight, and, I mean, I've been not on the bandwagon. I've been driving it with them. I think they're once you get kind of past the Nepo baby aspect and they're just dark guys who are goofs and you pay attention to their work in the ring and now you see the development of their promos, I think they're like it fits what Tony Khan, it's part of Tony Khan's booking. You say Tony Khan's booking doesn't have enough it should have a more narrow philosophy. Is it about great matches or is it about, you know, sports entertainment to heels or whatever you want to say? The Guns are good at what they're doing and they're getting better. And, you know, in the ring, they are smooth. They're hardworking. They hit the ropes hard. They take good flat back bumps. They put over the baby faces big time with their facial expressions. They do the right things in between moves to get heel heat. They're smart at what they do. And so the key is important. The cosmetics of their appearance, they're polishing their look. They're looking more major league in how they present themselves. And that's part of the battle to get people to look at you a different way. And they're putting more effort and thought into that in recent weeks too. So this was a good segment. They were dignified and cocky, but also you just want to see them get slapped around. Maybe my only critique here, because I know you inhaled and I hate to waste an inhale. But in a way, there might be too much truth in that promo that they've been the workhorses lately while FTR were whining elsewhere. That might be a little too accurate if they're supposed to be the heels and FTR babyfaces. So in a way, if I were to say something broke the narrative structure, that actually, I would say that I would have struck that from the bullet points for them to talk about because FTR babyfaces, and I don't think you want to put out there what is sort of, you know, a lot of people believe is a case that they were out there whining on podcasts and social media and it hurt their brand a little bit and they were disgruntled. I don't know if the heels should be bringing that up. Eric, your thoughts?
You are correct. However, it did turn the Guns baby face for me because I just find FTR Bald or Dax, as he is known, exhausting. Just so much to take. And I saw you, I think, in your recap somewhere today. You put out so much content today, it's hard for me to keep track. Because you're knocking it out of the park lately, even more so than usual. I think you said FTR is going to win.
Yeah, they're going to win. I think FTR are going to win. I'm trying to read the tea leaves, Eric.
I know you've been doing a lot of reporting lately, but you also have to keep things confidential, and you don't like doing spoilers just for spoilers' sake. That would seem to indicate FTR signed a new contract.
It would. And okay. I believe that is the case. I do believe that is the case. And I think the way that they're promoting this match and devoting TV time to them and, you know, Dax is in the opening of Dynamite. I mean, I think there's just clues that this is going to be an ongoing feud that goes beyond the title match next week. This does not this does not come across to me as we want FTR to put over the guns before they leave. I think the vibe is different in how this is being presented.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hopefully, if we are all lucky, there will be a clause in the FTR contract extension where he can't do the podcast anymore, because that would solve a whole lot of problems for me. And we can go back to focusing on what great workers FTR are, and how they...
It depends on what country you're in.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
UK. And they could get back to having good matches in the ring, and there's certainly no shortage of good opponents if AEW properly restructures its tag team division to focus on work rate.
One other thing I liked on the show was the presentation of The Butcher. I thought this was the most effective use of The Butcher that I can recall. He should have lost, and he did. Blade should have interfered and caused a ruckus to put Orange Cassidy in jeopardy. And I thought they did that effectively. And there was a part of me watching this match, just like with Kenny and Cobb, because of the way they told the story, I was starting to think, are they going to have Butcher win and try to get a little more out of him? He's been around forever. They obviously, Tony doesn't like laying people off, cutting people, but at the same time, Butcher and Blade have been around. And so I was like, are we going to actually, when we look at the roster and we have trouble coming up with someone other than maybe Swerve, and he's got the Keith Lee thing going, that isn't, to me, that shows that maybe Tony's looking around going, I got to get something more out of some of the people who have just been sort of lingering out there on Dark and Rampage and appearing on Dynamite now and then. Let's try to elevate Butcher and the Blade. So all that is going through my head while I'm watching the match, and they did enough to make me, doubt whether Cassidy's going to win. Now, in full disclosure, I wouldn't have taken 10-1 odds that Orange was losing, but I did believe it was more than a foregone conclusion he was losing, that Butcher was losing by the way they told the story. And I thought it was a solid match. I think Orange Cassidy is really proving, he has before. I mean, I think he's underrated in some circles. Tony Khan loves him. He's just mega respected behind the scenes. He's like super helpful to young guys. He's like, people say you can't find anyone say a bad word about somebody. That's Orange Cassidy. And, so there's, he's getting this TV time because he earned it, but he earned it for different reasons, but in part because he went out there and had a pretty solid match with Butcher that felt competitive, but in the end, he looked like he should win. So I'm gushing a little bit about that because it certainly over-delivered based on what I was thinking when I looked at the graphic, today, reminding myself of the lineup.
Yeah, I have a story, a comment, and a question about that. So the story is, in All Out 2019, before All Out 2019, I went to the whatever that show that Conrad Thompson, the fan convention he had, Starcast, at the hotel. And I am not big on, posing, asking wrestlers for autographs or posing for, selfies with wrestlers, just celebrities in general, because – not my thing. I did buy exactly one fan meet and greet experience because they were having a clearance sale. I paid $10 to talk to Orange Cassidy.
Oh, I was still hoping you were saying Butcher. Going to be such a great, better story. Okay, go ahead.
And I asked him, I'm like, so we see what your character has been on the indies, and it was very, almost like anti-wrestling or, postmodern wrestling or, just the little weak kicks and the not trying.
Yeah.
And I said, are you worried about what happens when you go on national television week after week and that kind of getting overexposed? And he said, I am not worried. We have a plan for this. And he's right. They absolutely had a plan for it, right? They broke him in gradually, and then he gradually added regular moves to his arsenal, and that those kicks that are, used to be hyper, hyper divisive are, they explain them away as head games, right?
Yep.
So, and he wrestles on mostly a normal match these days. So that's the story. The comment is, I'm not sure Butcher needed to be protected in losing with a crowbar shot. But there was a size differential between the two guys, so maybe. And then the question is, a crowbar shot by a face to help a face win? The psychology seemed a little askew on that, though they were justified, I guess, because they had already been hit with a crowbar shot by the heels. What did you make of that?
I don't remember the crowbar shot, Orange using the crowbar.
No, it was the two goofs, the best friends, outside, the Chuck and
well, they attacked Blade to to prevent him from interfering.
When Butcher went out of the ring, I think, or by the ropes, they hit him with it, I believe.
Oh, okay. You know what? I'm even looking at my report right now. I must have missed that in the chaos that was done. Because I agree with you. I don't think you need Butcher protected by getting hit with a crowbar, even if he had it coming. I just had Butcher threw the ref down and went after Chuck and Trent at ringside, and then Cassidy caught him with an orange punch and a beach breaker when he turned to the ring.
Trent ended up with the crowbar in his hands, and he sort of hit it from the referee. So, yeah, I believe I saw that. I could be wrong. If I'm wrong, I withdraw that, but that was my observation.
It's certainly possible for me to have missed it, too. So another thing, what do you think of the Jade-Ty Valkyrie feud so far? We got a promo with Jade talking about her and Smart Mark Sterling threatening to sue if Valkyrie uses the Jaded finisher that they're claiming they own possession of. And then Jade closed by saying she's a goddess of AEW. Is this good use of Ty Valkyrie so far? We haven't talked since she arrived.
I guess I'll damn it with faint praise. Is it better than what they'd been doing with Jade in that it's somebody fresh and new and somebody who they actually have a little bit of a story since they both have the same finisher? Yes, but Taya Valkyrie is not going to be appearing for Stardom Wrestling having 5-star main events anytime soon. So it's like, I guess it's better than nothing, but I assume Jade, is it next week in New York that's the match, or have they not announced it yet?
Don't think they announced yet. They're still threatening to sue if she uses a move.
Okay.
She's got a match on Friday first.
I hope we don't have 8 more weeks of this and they're doing it at Double or Nothing, because that would be that would get old pretty quickly.
What do you think Ty Valkyrie's ring work is it above the bar it needs to be at? I mean, having 5-star matches in Stardom is not the definition of being an effective wrestler in and of itself for a weekly national TV series where you're portraying a babyface against a heel.
I mean, I'd place her above Jade, but that's, again, not exactly high praise. She just has never impressed me with her work. She has a certain charisma and, a definite look, but just kind of been around and, I don't want to go so far as to call her the female Jeff Jarrett, because that's too far. That's not quite an apt comparison, but kind of in that vein she's been around. But it's harmless. It's another person to bring in to, be a gatekeeper level person after she gets her initial push and loss to Jade, I assume.
Will you be upset if Jeff Jarrett ends Orange Cassidy's international TV title reign, as I call it?
Well, we had that match in Winnipeg, and it did not happen. So I feel like I'm whistled past the graveyard on that one.
Yeah. They can always go back to it. Rematches happen. Jeff's working hard to earn a rematch. It did okay in the ratings. Tony's a numbers guy. I could see him going back to it. Could be the pay-per-view match for Orange.
I'm not
conveying slyly inside information. I'm just trying to
get I hope Jeff Jarrett keeps on booking house shows to get the people who need more reps and stays off of my Dynamite. Maybe he's a Rampage guy. That'd be fine.
Anything else from Dynamite tonight in your notes that you want to bring up?
Yeah, I had a couple. They definitely forwarded the Hook Ethan Page feud that they sort of set up last week when Stokely lost to Hook and Matt Hardy said backstage as he's trying to goad, sabotage from within, goaded Ethan Page, you got to avenge Stokely. So that was nice. Like, it had the side benefit of calling back to the Jungle Boy Hook team and allowed MJF to talk about it. And so that was nice little bit. When Kenny is told about Don Callis being attacked by Tony Schiavone just before his match, that's literally the Rocky III plot. I know the Rocky III plot has been in the news a lot, but Clubber Lang, played by Mr. T in Rocky III, gets in a scuffle and pushes Mickey, played by Burgess Meredith, Rocky's trainer, pushes him into like the, in some like hallway type pre-match scrum, and then Rocky's distracted because Mickey either dies or is about to die before the bout takes place. So Kenny, being distracted by that, I laughed. I didn't know if that was coincidence, but I just took and wrote down in my notes that it literally is the Rocky III plot that Moxley apparently pitched last August to not great effect, in my opinion. And then Ruby Soho did not come out to the rancid Ruby Soho song tonight, mm-hmm. which is smart because that's a very song that people know, and it makes her as a, frames her as a baby face.
Same with Monty and Wild Thing.
Yeah, they should stop that as well. Did they? Yeah. Have they?
No,
they?
No, I don't know. But I mean, it was, you know, it was a group coming out. So, and then afterwards, Danielson's music played. So, you know, we need a bigger sample size to see if it's deliberate.
Yeah. And then the post-match setup where Riho came out to make the save with Sky Blue and failed miserably, and then Jamie Hayter had to come out and make the save. That was good because, you know, it was a post-match angle that furthered the storyline with the Outcasts, but also, you know, teased the title match next week with Hayter and Riho. And instead of Hayter attacking Riho to get an advantage, they, I believe they shook hands, right? So,
yep.
Little touches overall that made it feel like thought had been put into every segment, which has not always been the case on AEW Dynamite.
Yeah, I think it deserves praise. And the things that I felt were, you know, amateur hour or below par or sloppy or phoned in, whatever, all those, this didn't have much of that, much at all. It does feel like a step up in the product, not dramatically so, like Tony's been replaced as Booker, but it does feel like there's more attention to detail, and maybe the support team has, you know, has stepped up in that regard. And again, I think Mike Mansouri is getting more influence and good reviews for the things he's trying to implement. You know, Tony Khan is full steam ahead in terms of how he approaches things and getting, you know, trying to steer him in a little different direction or slow him down to go, what about this is difficult. And it's a process, but I think that process is in progress. Okay, so you alluded to it. I did earlier in the show. James in Clemson says, I listened to all your coverage of the Punk drama this week. I lose respect for CM Punk daily. I'm just curious what your thoughts are on Jim Ross's comments. So we put this up at pwtorch.com earlier, a quote of what Jim Ross had to say about the Punk situation. I don't know. I haven't listened to the totality of Jim's comments, but he did predict that Punk will be brought back to AEW because there's money to be made. I'll pull up the quote here. Eric, did you see the or listen
did.
Even? Yeah. I mean, here's the quote.
Both, yeah.
I'm one of those guys who believes he'll be back. I think AEW needs CM Punk because of his star power, and he brings and what he brings with controversy creates cash, and he's certainly controversial. And I'm a big fan of Phil's. So you heard it also, Eric?
I didn't hear the podcast. I heard your podcast where you referenced.
Okay.
I saw a story about the story about his comments. Yeah.
Yeah. So, what do you think about that quote?
I guess I wonder how much JR is in the inner circle these days.
Right.
Right. I mean, he has been
not much.
His complainingness has been busted down from sort of lead announcer on the flagship show of Dynamite down to. A little bit on a pay-per-view, but gone before the main event, and Rampage on Friday nights, which is
editable
by about half as many people, where he could, you know, from time to time, is still cranky and cantankerous. So I'm not sure JR knows has any inside information. Certainly in a better position than I am to have some, though.
Yeah. You've heard my reporting all week on this and listen to my conversation with Rich. Where are you on this? Like, what do you think of the coverage? What do you think of has anything changed about how you feel about Punk and Moxley? Do you see, I mean, I think there are two sides to this story and in different perspectives, which, you know, I deliberately formatted the flagship yesterday with Rich to try to, you know, block out time to make sure, you know, we're going, all right, here's what Punk's situation is. Here's what he's looking at. And here's Moxley and then, you know, here's Tony Khan trying to make things work. And then I've done some reporting since then and did two hotlines today for VIP members on this, the main focus on AEW one, with my cover story, the Torch newsletter, also being read out loud and adding to it. And then, the Ask the Editor responding to some people who emailed in with some, you know, specific pushback or question, not pushback, I guess a little pushback on Moxley and people who might frame him as the clear cut good guy in this. So anyway, yeah, Eric, over to you. Take it wherever you want.
Yeah, I mean, I think your reporting has been great on this. You've been on top of things. It's really easy in the modern journalism business, whatever the subject that's being covered, politics or cops and robbers reporting or pro wrestling, to just go with some clickbaity headline based on what, you know, very thinly sourced material. And, you know, we certainly see a lot of that week to week in the pro wrestling websites. But you didn't. You took a couple days to actually try and do some old fashioned shoe leather. Well, probably not actual shoe leather. You weren't out on the street, but you were working the phones and the text.
And I wouldn't wear leather. I thought that's where you're going.
And the emails, yeah, and leather would violate the vegan code. So, applause for Wade for that, serving your readers well when, you know, you can be out there in the sort of trenches chasing scoops on what match is going to get announced third from the bottom on the pay-per-view. And that's, I guess, fine for your, if that's your business model for your readers, but it'll quickly be, you know, aggregated by everybody else or announced by the promotion themselves. But, you know, in these situations where there's big news happening, you step up and step forward and, you know, bring actual modern journalism and old-fashioned journalism techniques into things and do your readers a service rather than just going for clicks. So that's good that you can help. You can also help shape everybody else's narrative based on what you report, and that happens a lot. I find Mox's gripe about being the interim champion, I find that incredibly dumb. It's pro wrestling. It's a stage play. It's a work. The belts are just props. Who cares whether you're the interim champion or the regular champion? I mean, it seems like very Mark behavior. I don't want to say John Moxley is a Mark. I've read his book. I know he's a very thinks a lot about wrestling, but it just seems very silly to me. And Mox is not alone on AEW All Access. And Tony Storm are talking backstage, and you know, Tony is decrying that she's going to be an interim champion, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It just seems silly to me when it's, you know, they're in the 80s, Jake the Snake didn't want to win a title because he didn't want to carry the damn belt through the airport, right? I mean, big pain in the butt to travel with the thing. It's just, I find that justification dumb. But, you know, if you're John Moxley and you're not under contract, I'm not sure why Tony Khan is putting his title on him, as John himself said, hey, I could have shown up in WWE at SummerSlam and put the title in the trash, but I didn't do so. In hindsight, it just seems the interim title thing seems too cute by half. And if it is actually a big deal with your wrestlers who are being a little bit marquee about it, it's just better to have stripped Punk of the belt in, you know, when he got injured in that tag match in June, right after
I'll interject this because I don't want to forget points. Yeah. I think if Tony Khan had stripped Punk of the title, that he's going to be out longer than 6 weeks, and that's our rule. If it's longer than 6 weeks and we know it, then you get stripped. Otherwise, we'll do an interim title. That's just an arbitrary number, but let's say that he did that. And then Mox won at Forbidden Door, the AEW championship, and he defended it all summer. And then Punk comes back, and Moxie was booked to lose to Punk at All Out. I don't know that Moxley's view would be strongly different than it was. I think the interim thing was absolutely a factor, but I think the bigger issue was I didn't beat Punk to become champion. And as soon as he comes back, it's like, thanks for filling in, backup quarterback, but the star is back. It's your time to lose to him. And I think he was sensitive to that because he is protective of his brand more than a mark for the title. And he felt, along with, I think, some pretty strong negative feelings about Punk that's shared by his colleagues, friends, and otherwise in that locker room, that added a personal level to it, which is this guy walks in, gets paid a bigger deal, gets a bigger contract than anybody else, took, you know, 7-8 years off, has been a problem. Comes in and then rubs people the wrong way and, you know, left and right pretty much from the beginning changed the tone and tenor of the locker room. And now you're going to send a message to all the fans that, yeah, don't make no mistake about it. Punk is a level higher than Moxley. You know, I think that combined with was all more important, and the interim thing just added a little something extra to it. But I don't think it should be framed as that was a thing that Moxley was primarily hung up on.
And then the result is this goofy squash win over Punk 10 days or so before the pay-per-view that left it didn't have enough time to play out, right? If you're going to do the Rocky III storyline, it's not like Rocky loses to Clubber Lang and then the next 10 days later he's getting the rematch, right? He has to go build himself up. I mean, what they skipped there, if you're talking about the Rocky III storyline, is Apollo Creed, you know, and a scene on the beach where Rocky recovers and beats Apollo Creed in a race, even if I still think Apollo Creed threw that race on the beach in the sand. And you know, the building back up of Rocky to, you know, they skipped that part of it. And that's why, if they were doing that storyline, it didn't work. They came out with a weird, who is this? I was there in the building, so I didn't know who Ace Steel was that night. I found out later on TV, but even when I found out, I was like, some random dude is coming to play the Apollo Creed role. And the buy rate probably wasn't as good as they would have liked, and the build felt flat for All Out. I don't think there's many people who deny that. So I'm not sure Moxley's, you know, putting his own interests at heart, and he had the leverage to do so, because again, it's Tony Khan's fault he put the belt on a guy who didn't have under contract. It didn't play out well. Punk's mind must be a really weird place to be, because on the one hand, he's tweeting about how he's reading Steve Kern's book and how, boy, Steve Kern got in a fight with Coco Ware, and then Jerry Lawler calls him in the office and they settle it out the next day and everything is great. And he's tweeting, Instagramming that one day, and the next day he's having an unhinged rant that he quickly deletes because Dave Meltzer has triggered him with some offhanded weird message board post. Like, my thought about that from a journalism standpoint was, Dave, that's new information. Why have you not reported it unless you didn't report it at the time and haven't reported it since, but you decide to put it on your message board? Did you forget that it was fair game? It would be viewed as an act of committing journalism. And I know Dave has sort of apologized for the way that all came out, but information is information, and what Punk is an adult, and he is in control of how he reacts to that. And like within days, or maybe it was even a day after, he's dropping not too subtle hints that, boy, we could let bygones be bygones, and I could come back because it was just a backstage fight, and those have happened all the time in wrestling. You know, he now completely blew up his, you know, any time heals all wounds. Well, he's just reopened all the wounds, and I think. Punk had a rough, he grew up in the neighboring town to where I live, and kind of a blue collar town, hard scrabble place, working class folks. I don't think I'm breaking news here, but you know, Punk has his upbringing. He had a hard upbringing, and he's just this damaged guy who had a rough childhood and has trust issues because of what happened to him in WWE. And it doesn't seem like he's dealt with maybe some things he could deal with, and he's just comes across as extremely toxic to others, and that does not argue for bringing him back at this point. I think that's the position you've come down on, correct, as well?
I haven't taken a stand. I really haven't. I mean, I think if you brought Punk back as a commentator, it could be awkward when he's calling Moxley's match. There's some trouble there, but if you're trying to get your money's worth out of him and you're worried about him not being medically cleared or whatever, but you know, if you brought him back and he's in his trailer and he comes in a side entrance and he feuds with Powerhouse Hobbs, I just throw that name out there because he's a heel champion and Punk can be a babyface. I mean, you can still get something out of Punk. Tony Khan's a huge fan of Punk. Punk, if he wants to wrestle, and I don't know that he does, I don't know that he wants to return. But if he wants to return and you know, produce something, contribute to AEW to earn that money as opposed to getting a settlement. There's a way to make it work, but I can say that, but I know I do not have as strong of feelings negatively about Punk than a lot of people who feel like they are very generous above and beyond. I don't want to frame it that way. There's wrestlers who very much want to improve AEW and are rooting for AEW to succeed, who spend time talking with Tony about things other than their stuff. who, kind of like Hall and Nash did with Bischoff when they fired their good friend Sean Waltman over something that they were mad, you know, Eric fired Sean and said, it's because I'm mad at you guys. They just shut down and they said, all right, well, we're going to do exactly what's in the letter of the contract. You pay us and we'll do only the bare minimum. And Hall and Nash both admitted to me that's what they did at that moment. That's what their mindset was going forward, and it hurt WCW. And so Tony Khan's a student of the business and a student of history. I think there's some mistakes, you know, he might be repeating in terms of, you know, taking on more programming hours and that kind of thing. But there's something to be learned from what happened there. And I just think he should, you know, figure out if what I'm hearing is something he should be concerned about, and then balance out what it would cost to pay off Punk versus the message it would send to the people who feel they've been real loyal to him and are going to be there and be healthy and loyal to him and not toxic and not have, you know, one blow up after another, and take that into consideration. And then he's just got to make a decision weighing that all out, just like they did in the lead up to All Out. I mean, nobody thought that was a great scenario. When Tony Khan presented the compromise of the title match a week and a half beforehand, Mox didn't like it at first, and then he did. And then he tried to make it work, and then he got into it. And, you know, but nobody thought there was enough time to tell the story properly, but it really was just kind of a compromise that Tony came up with based on the conundrum with Moxley and Punk in those special circumstances. So I don't think there's a great answer to this. I mean, sometimes people are critical of a result without taking into account that it might be the best of, you know, six bad options.
Yeah, I mean, everything you certainly laid out, the logical conclusion somebody could draw from reading that is Punk is, you know, what's Rich Fans, one of his catchphrases, the juice is not worth the squeeze. I think, I mean, that's certainly how you have framed it up, even if you're not, you know, taking an opinion on it. You know, I mean, I think the message to, you know, and then the other thing is, Tony Khan was the one who was emasculated by CM Punk in front of everybody who's seen that press conference, and I was sitting 10 feet away from both of those guys. And, you know,
Tony's got to worry about being respected by the wrestlers who he employs.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, so, like, history would say, you know, the Carney history of wrestling is the only thing that matters is making money, right? And there are lots of money to be made in theory with CM Punk coming back and feuding with the Elite, feuding with MJF, feuding with Jericho. You know, there's money to be made. And in the past, I feel like that was the only thing that mattered. And, you know, F your feelings, right? And just work together and get along and let's all make a ton of money. Feel like that's not the case in 2023, and that people's emotions and willingness to work with others, they're not as willing to set aside those personal beliefs to make money, and nor is there an incentive to do so. Like, I have not heard anything in the AEW contracts that say you will get paid a bonus based on the buy rate, right? I mean, there might be, but there's not an incentive to be gained by bringing this guy back to the locker room, because I'm getting paid $500,000, $750,000, $1 million a year, whether Punk is here or not. And that's not going to change if he comes back and we suddenly go on a hot streak of 250,000 pay-per-view buys and over a million Dynamite wrestlers or not. And I guess my last point would be, just AEW can avoid having to deal with the CM Punks of the world if they create their own stars. And it seems to be a little bit of what they're trying to do with the four pillars match that they seem to be building toward at Double or Nothing. And I know you have noted the same thing.
Yeah. And I mean, the pieces have been in place for a while, but it's been inconsistent and scattershot. And now you got Jamie Hayter and Jade Cargill and a Taya Valkyrie signing and people you feel comfortable with who aren't going to create trouble with, you know, Ruby Soho. I mean, maybe Saraya and Britt Baker are challenging sometimes behind the scenes, but they're, you know, Willow Nightingale, you know, you're trying to take the Acclaimed, the Guns. There's more consistent TV time being given to people who are going to be grateful to Tony for the opportunity, but it's not just that. It's that there's a lack of baggage, and it's Tony getting to know people who he likes, thinks are talented, and will be reasonable to work with, you know, like that. They're just, you might not like it if you're a fan of a wrestler, but if they're a real pain to work with and the backup plan to get a push might not be as talented or as charismatic, but is going to allow you to get through your day with your bandwidth, you know, being used up every day and every week, you're going to sometimes go with the person who's less of a headache, less of a challenge to deal with if you think overall it's not going to affect business that much negatively to not feature somebody who's a headache, and it'll actually benefit business because you won't have to be dealing with them. And that's the balance with punk. That's the balance with some people in this business. And, you know, some people are beyond that. You know, Brock Lesnar was so beyond that that you put up with stuff. But other people, you know, Braun Strowman or whoever, you know, you don't. You know, you humble them. You send them away and show you life goes on without them. So I don't know. Those are all – but Tony's new, you know, still relatively new at this, and these are new things he's facing. But I do think we're seeing signs that he's like, all right, I want to push the people, you know, who I think will be – will be reasonable and not create a lot of drama.
And it's weird because it's not like Tony Khan has not banished some people to the netherworld. Andrade, Miro, and Brian Cage would be the three most obvious examples, right?
And FTR a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, even though they had a great year last year just in terms of matches and accolades, but outside of AEW for the most part, right? Those were Ring of Honor, New Japan matches. So, yeah, he has shown the ability to do it, but there's, you know, the top stars, you know, there's always a set of rules for mid-carders and there's a set of rules for top stars. So
yeah.
This is a test of that.
Yeah. Well, cool. So, yeah, people want to hear a lot of expanded behind-the-scenes details and insights, the Wade Keller Hotline on Sunday, two of them today, and also the long form, Everything with Rich and Wade yesterday, all are immediately available if you go VIP. So pwtorch.com/go VIP. Eric, thank you. Good discussion on a good episode of Dynamite, not like blockbuster news-wise, but I think a good show, you know, with some good developments to review.
Yes, I'm seeing that story that supposedly Don Callis was legitimately injured during the backstage angle.
Oh, no.
cut his head, hit his head as he fell, leading to the cut. So.
Oh, wow. Well, I feel strangely better about that because I didn't think it called for a blade job. So what happened?
That would be good. I'm like, wow, that's a long way to go for some heat there. Yeah, for plugs, I will only plug Todd Martin's story in the LA Times where he actually interviewed Tony Khan for a piece on AEW. LA Times obviously writing a bunch about WrestleMania this week. I suspect they ordered up the AEW piece for a little bit of balance. And another interesting story in a week when wrestling will be, you know, LA is the wrestling capital of the world. So you could read
it.
I was able to read Todd Martin's story in the LA Times. I did not get hit with a paywall when I clicked on his tweet. So you can find it there. Todd Martin MMA, I think is his handle.
It is. Yep. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. Check that out, everybody. And I'll be talking to Todd tomorrow on The Fix for VIP members too. So go VIP and there's even more to come. All right, cool. Thanks to our callers. Thanks to our emailers. Thank you, Eric. Thanks to everybody listening. And we'll talk to y'all next time.